Hey, Matt Bubala.
Hey, Patty Vasquez.
Hi. So we're in the same building, but we're...
I know. I miss you. You never talk to me anymore. Now you're doing Crosstalk with Sunday morning shows.
I know. Isn't that amazing? the guys can't hear you. Oh, that's so weird. Oh, well, I can hear you.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters to anybody.
I care about them.
We can hear Matt Bubala. I'm so sorry. He's jealous of me because I'm doing Crosstalk with the Sunday morning show and not with him.
Just skipping right over me, skipping ahead all day.
That's right, just moving ahead, that's all. What do you got coming up on your show, my friend?
We're going to talk with Joy Press. She wrote a fascinating book about how women have taken over television and the way they've changed the face of it in the last 20, 30 years. And then we're going to talk a lot about, you know, everything else that's going on in the world. And, you know, I was listening to you guys on the way in, and you guys were talking a little bit about how, you know, they filed this federal lawsuit and against Stormy to try to move where the lawsuit takes place, but also threatening her with like $20 million, saying she violated The funny thing is, that's really just to try to shut her up, right? To intimidate her and to bully her, say, oh, we're going to take $20 million from you. Don't you think that with the way things are right now, if she started a GoFundMe, like people would come up with $20 million in like 2 seconds.
They're
like, well, you owe $20 million. Okay, here it is. Now I'm going to talk. And they're like, oh, wait.
Well, they're asking for $20 million. So for the guys in the studio who can't hear you say that, there would probably be a GoFundMe campaign for Stormy Daniels if they were like, we owe us $20 million. But the thing is that they could also say that every single dime that she ever makes off of talking about her relationship with Donald Trump. So I don't know how you continuously raise. I don't know.
Well, the agreement says for every violation, you owe $1 million.
Right.
And so part of the argument is going to be, how do you define a violation? Yeah. Is the 60 Minutes interview one violation, or is it multiple violations?
Right. So.
Well, where do you see it? Where do the guys see it turning out that they're suing that the agreement is invalid?
Where do you guys see this going with the agreement being invalid, that lawsuit? Do you think that that she'll win in that sense?
I think there's a very valid issue about the fact that he did not sign the document. And I'm no lawyer. But what I've learned in 30 years is you don't have to be a lawyer. Right. There are some common sense things here, and there is a space on the document for that signature to make it valid, and it's not there.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the question is, did Michael Cohen have his power of attorney to sign this document, or does he have a blanket power of attorney for Donald Trump? I doubt it. But if he did, then it's valid. Then
and
Trump doesn't
quite
need
frankly,
to sign.
If he has a valid power of attorney for Donald Trump?
Oh, yeah.
He could be worth a ton of money.
Absolutely.
You know,
or in a lot of debt.
Or in a lot of debt. Sorry. I have to repeat everything that Matt says because otherwise my guests in the studio can't hear it.
but the other thing is, though, is they gave her the money. So isn't that kind of like...
She's giving it back.
She's offered.
Well, she's offered.
Well, you guys
trust me, she can give it back.
Oh, she can, at this point.
The lawyer
sure.
can give it back. Yes.
Could you imagine the book?
Let me.
How about the video?
No video.
Let me turn the show over to you, Matt.
They'll just keep going upstairs. And if anybody wants to drop by the Tribune Tower and visit, they'll be there for the next hour and a half talking about that.
Exactly.
Patty, thank you so much. It's good to talk to you again. Hopefully, I'll see you soon.
I will hopefully see you soon as well. Have a great weekend. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Matt.
You too.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. If you have a smart speaker, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Roger, I was only teasing earlier. I'm sorry.
I know you were teasing.
All right. Thank you.
I know you
are. I'll
come
and give you a hug before I go.
I like that. Here I like a St. Patrick's Day hug from you.
Exactly. Here with your news is Roger Battish.
Look at that. Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up even later with us. Roger Battish is in the newsroom. Jess is behind the glass. Roger, I want to say right now, I'm sorry your Wildcats bowed out.
I know.
I know you were really looking forward to that game.
They were doing so good.
Lost by like six or something, right?
I'm sorry?
Six or eight is all they lost by. It was a good game, it sounds
like. Yeah, yeah, only by six. Yeah, yeah.
So there's
it was
that.
A very good game, and unfortunately, I couldn't see it. I've read a couple of tweets from some people, I think, who either were there or watched it on whatever channel it might have been on.
Right.
That actually it was a lot closer than 6 points. Mm. It was the bounce of a basketball that was the difference of a couple of baskets and could have gone the other way. But they another good year for the Wildcats, and they went pretty far. Unfortunately, losing to Whitney Young, who beat him last year.
Well, at the very least,
yes,
they weren't the absolute number one seed who lost to the absolute last seed.
Wow. Was that, did you see the game?
I did not. I was taking my nap, uh-huh, as I try to do every night.
Right.
Or the one night a week before I come in.
Mm-hmm.
And my son Jack burst into the room and said, "Dad, a number one's about to get upset by a number 16. They're up by like 18 with like 3 minutes left. You got to come see it." And I'm like, all right. And I wasn't going to come down because I don't, yeah, care that much.
Right, right.
And I didn't know who it was or anything like that. It's not like it was, you know, Northwestern suddenly upsetting somebody.
Right, or Loyola.
Yeah, so I'm like, all upset. Right, well.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, I got to get up in a few minutes. Well, it was only 10:30. I'd just gone and been not that long. I'm like, oh, man, I got to try to fall asleep again.
Yeah.
But so I'm reading about 135th time that a 16 seed played a number one seed,
mm-hmm,
in the tournament. So I'm guessing, let's see. So if there's four of those a year, I'm trying to do the quick math here. That would be 25 years to get to 100. And then another, what, like four times seven?
What are you doing? I'm
trying to do the math. So 25 and 8. So 33 years. Must have been 33 years of the tournament having 64 teams. Right?
Well,
it's happened 135 times.
Yeah.
It's never that, happened it must have
before.
Been smaller.
It's never well, happened
right,
before.
Right. So I'm saying 135 yeah. times in yeah. the 38 years or whatever that mm-hmm. we've had a 64 team tournament,
okay.
the 16 has always played the one and always lost.
Right.
Went to overtime once before, went to last second shots a couple times,
mm-hmm.
but never lost. Yeah. And they didn't just lose.
They got
destroyed.
Yes. 20 points, the final difference. And they never trailed. I mean, the beginning was a little tight, but all of a sudden they just start pulling away. Did you see any of the video?
No, I haven't seen a look of it.
These guys from, honest to goodness, the guys from Maryland, it's like they could never miss.
Only 21-21 at the end of the first half, which means in the second half, mm-hmm. they outscored them 53-33.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's in the second half. They blew them out.
They never missed a shot.
Well, that's one of the things they wrote is that they played it smart. They didn't. They didn't start just trying to hold the lead. They just kept attacking.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Because sometimes you'll find these teams that have never been in tournaments before, and they get a little lead, and they go, okay, let's just hold the ball.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Absolutely.
And they can't win. Yeah.
It's not just number one seed. This was the number one team in the nation.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And so now, how many brackets are left?
Have to be none, right?
None. How many people picked Arizona in the Final Four?
I have no
just
idea.
Amazing.
I have no idea. So yeah. Arizona
totally blown up.
Arizona wasn't a one seed. What were they?
Ooh, Arizona? Oh, Arizona was a one seed in their regional.
But
I'm not sure what their national seed was. I don't know what their ranking was.
Arizona didn't lose it yet. Then
Arizona lost.
Well, we're talking about Virginia.
Right.
You're switching topics on me.
Saying I'm
Arizona.
Sorry.
Arizona wouldn't have lost because if they were number one seed, they would have played a 16.
Right. Arizona.
They must not have been a one seed. Right?
They lost, let's see here. They lost to Buffalo? Wait a minute. Let me double check here. Hold on a second.
Anyways, it's been a lot of upsets, right?
Yeah. It's too much information for me, to be honest with you. For someone who doesn't follow college basketball like I used to in my youth.
Year they were married, he like put $5 million in an account for her, something along those lines. Which is a real weird prenup that the longer we're married, the more money you have of your own. It's an odd thing to go into because it sounds like a paid contract in a way, right? But I wondered if Melania had the same sort of thing, and Donald Trump wouldn't want people to know that, right? That's kind of embarrassing, or you know, makes it look kind of, I don't know. But
what,
so
hush
I was,
money? Hush money for
I mean,
his
it's
wife?
Sort of, well, not hush money necessarily, but like if you have a prenup where somebody's getting so much money for the longer they stay in the marriage, that seems kind of like something that that would be fodder to attack him with and things like that. And mm-hmm. maybe he didn't want that out there.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's probably the case at all. And thinking of who Donald Trump is, he'd be like, I'm a smart businessman. That's why I have that. I've been burned in marriage before. I know how this is or you know, whatever. He can spin anything. So. But I feel for Melania
and Barron
I you know that's
what's it like going to school for him
that's a very good question
seriously
that's
with
a very
everything
good
that's going on and there is a lot
there is
what
a
is
lot.
It like for him
I don't know. I wish him the best. That's for sure. Yeah. All right. 2:31 in the morning. We've got a guest coming up next. So let's get upstairs and check the news. Here's the headlines with Roger Badish. Yeah. It's the Matt Bubala Show, 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being up with us even later. Thank you to Joy Press for joining us on the phone right now. Joy is the author of Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television. Hey, Joy, how are you doing? Oh, did I hit that wrong? Hold on. Hey, Joy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us. Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television. It's fascinating to me because I think we're in a golden age of television, right? With the advent of Netflix and everything else that put all this pressure on the networks to not just on the networks, because it's really AMC and all these other stations, HBO, that could take more risks because they want, I think, because, right, they just wanted some awards to draw some attention because there's all these networks, and how do you get people to watch a network? You got to get some buzz. So it opened up this era where all these different shows came out. And I want to start by asking you about the current day. I want to go back to how things really started changing for women and find out how much they've truly changed. But I'm curious because we talk so much when we talk about television about The Sopranos or Mad Men. And the interesting thing about those two shows is they created these characters that maybe you rooted for, but you really shouldn't have, right? They were bad. They, in essence, weren't really the best of people. And that was a real change, right, in the television landscape, that you didn't necessarily have to, be the good person, right, that was the main character. Maybe they were really inherently complexly flawed and maybe not that good of a person, but you still had this rooting interest in them. Have we come far enough that we're seeing women characters the same way, that they can put out a show not only fronted by women and about women or leading woman character, but that isn't like Mary Tyler Moore, even though, you know, she wasn't married and, you know, we talked about birth control, different things like that a little bit, still in essence, you just loved Mary to death and she would have never done anything truly wrong. Can women be
absolutely?
Can women be a Tony Soprano on television these days?
Well, you know, I think, as you said, I mean, we loved these characters, even though, you know, maybe they were like shooting people or, you know, lying or torturing people. And the anti-heroes really became a huge part of this new golden age. And you know, I think one of the things was that female characters were really limited in what they were allowed to do on television. So as you said, I mean, Mary Tyler Moore was a fantastic character, and she, you know, sort of did really push like ideas of female characters on TV forward. But really, she, you know, had a very sort of narrow line of what she was allowed to do. And over the years, we have had a handful of kind of female antiheroes. I mean, Weeds, which was a show that Jenji Kohan created even before Breaking Bad. I mean, she created the show about like a suburban mom who becomes a drug dealer to kind of support her kids' lifestyle, her family's lifestyle. And that was kind of like a real hint of you know, what we might see if women were allowed to kind of be bad like the guys. And we've increasingly started to see, you know, female characters and a lot of female TV creators kind of, you know, yearning to like create these like not necessarily bad, but just much more complicated and dark characters. And, you know, it might just be like somebody like Mindy Kaling created for the Mindy Project, just like a really, you know, kind of wild and, you know, problematic character. It could be, you know, the characters on Orange is the New Black, where, I mean, these are women who were in jail for, you know, committing a range of crimes. But yes, I mean, you're definitely seeing, you know, female characters on TV kind of fighting for their right to be, you know, evil, obnoxious, flawed, for sure.
Let's talk about how women started revolutionizing, because I thought you would only really go back as far as maybe Roseanne and Diane English, but really you start talking about Marlo Thomas and Lucille Ball and how they started changing things. But it was very interesting to read about. I guess, I don't know the history of television that well, and I know that they were famous people who then had shows, but it's fascinating that you would think they're rich and famous and powerful, they have these hit shows, but they couldn't play it in the same way that a man would have running those shows, right? That Marlo Thomas said, here I am writing the checks and doing everything, yet I am playing down to these guys because I don't want to intimidate these guys that I do need, because it's mostly, right, male comedy writers in Hollywood at the time, or New York, wherever she was taping. She needed those people. So instead of being able to just be the boss and be who she really was on that show, she had to placate the men, didn't she?
Yeah, I mean, that was really interesting to read that far back, that the ways that women kind of had to work the system, and I mean, actually, I think much later than that, I had women who said to me, you know, that they were always kind of struggling to not make men feel uncomfortable or intimidated, and you know, you were always sort of trying to navigate that role of like trying to get what you wanted, but not, not make people feel like you were threatening them. So, I mean, certainly, you had women like Marlo Thomas. I mean, Mary Tyler Moore was very much in charge of her own show, but, a lot of the time they were co-creating it with their husband. So Mary Tyler Moore created her show with her producer husband. Lucille Ball did the same. And there was a real sort of tradition of that. Even Murphy Brown, Diane English was the genius behind it. She, you know, was the writer and the producer, but she originally kind of co-created it with her husband. So I think that was a way of having it be a little bit less intimidating to male executive. I mean, to the male writers, and male executives felt a little bit more comfortable perhaps dealing with the male partners. And I mean, that's certainly not the case today, unless someone has chosen to have a male partner. But in the old days, that definitely seemed to make the industry feel more comfortable.
Well, I was amazed to read that Lucille Ball, who was a star in movies, maybe not, you know, the ginormous sexy star of that we think of, the ingenue, but she was a star in her own right in film before she made the transition, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
so
she was a B movie star, I think.
Okay.
Not quite, but
sure.
Yeah, as you said, not the big movie star.
So her and her husband Desi Arnaz want to do this TV show, and the network execs aren't buying it. So they actually took it on the road, you said, to convince people this could be a hit. And that's an amazing thing to think about somebody doing, especially somebody that was already a bit of a celebrity at the time, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that you find with a lot of the women that I talk about in the book is that they figured out ways to kind of sneak in, and they often had to go the extra mile to make it work. And yeah, I mean, she and her husband, you know, who was a sort of Cuban performer, had to kind of go out there and prove that there was an audience. Because all the way along, I mean, really until the present, there's always been this a sense that, like, you know, women were a kind of niche.
Yeah.
Even though we're half the population, like, we're just, you know, a particular taste that not everyone's going to want to see.
And I have to imagine for Lucille Ball at the time, I imagine there were two strikes against her, being a woman, but then having this Cuban husband with this thick accent. I could just see all the white old executives sitting in the room going, what are we going to do with this redhead and this, you know, you would imagine that was really an uphill battle for them.
Absolutely. And she became incredibly important. I mean, not just because she was so funny, but, you know, it really, I think opened up a new pathway in terms of, how women could be funny in public, and certainly became a huge influence for an awful lot of, comedians and actresses and writers.
when I don't know if you watched the Academy Awards a couple weeks ago, but they did a lot of empowering women clips and things like that with the whole Me Too movement that's going on this year. And I remember they were interviewing Gina Davis, and she talked about when Thelma and Louise came out and became such a huge success that she said people were saying, this changes everything. There's going to be all these female-led, female-driven films now. This is going to change everything. And she's like, but it didn't. And nothing really changed at the time. And I wonder, was there a particular moment in time that things did change for women in television, that somebody finally broke through? Because there's all these success stories of Lucille Ball and Marlo Thomas and Diane English and Roseanne. But was there a moment that did truly change the way executives thought and made them say, wait a minute, we're missing out on a whole untapped market here of for the viewers and for talent that maybe we're not using?
The sort of great mystery is you know, you have these moments and it seems like this has got to change everything, and then it kind of goes back again. So you have something like I start the book really properly with kind of Murphy Brown and Roseanne. They both premiered in 1988, a month apart from each other, and they're both these like incredible characters, very, very different characters, but both like really strong, funny, aggressive, and it seemed like those shows were huge, 20, 30 million people watching them. You know, they were central to American culture. And it felt like, okay, you can't go back after that, right? And yet, it really wasn't exactly followed up on. And, you know, you had a show like Sex and the City that was so important. It really helped put HBO on the map, and it, you know, seemed like really broke so much ground, and it meant so much to so many people. And yet, you know, that wasn't really followed up upon. And so, you know, you keep having these things, and it felt to me like around kind of 2011, 2012, that kind of area, you had an explosion of shows, you know, Girls and New Girl and Orange is the New Black and, you know, Broad City, Transparent. I mean, you had Shonda Rhimes and her slate of shows kind of, you know, doing incredibly well on network television. And that was a moment for me when I thought, okay, something is really happening, and it's going to be very hard to go back after this. The you know, enormous amount of talent, the range of shows, and since then, frankly, it's just gotten, you know, it's just gotten bigger. And every year there have been, you know, like another dozen shows created by women that are kind of, you know, totally new, different kinds of female characters. And so, you know, my sense right now is it would be very hard to turn back. And so I think, you know, we're sort of in the middle of a golden age, the beginning of a golden age, I think, of, you know, this kind of these female shows.
We're speaking with Joy Press. The book is Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television. We'll talk a little bit more about those women, who they are, and how they're revolutionizing what we're watching. Next, Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. The Matt Bubala Show, 720 WGN. We're chatting with Joy Press, the author of Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television. You know, so I was looking up during the break, Joy, and you were saying 2011, 2012 is kind of where things really took the permanent change. And I was thinking and looking up that Netflix started in 2010. And I wonder if, you know, I wonder, because I'd like to give credit to the executives that they finally woke up and realized that these women are talented and amazing and can do all these great things. I think it was the pressure of the economics that probably forced their hand as much as anything. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, we're in a really transitional moment with television, and, you know, you used to have 3, 4, 5 major networks that kind of had a lock on everything, and, yeah, and they were the gatekeepers. And now, as you said before, you have all of these cable networks, and then now you have streaming networks. So you have Netflix, you have Amazon, Hulu, and so it's opened up a huge array of slots for TV shows, for new creators. They're a lot more open. They need more content, and you know, they don't necessarily have the leverage that the networks had. So they've definitely opened up a lot of doors for women who have been struggling to get their stories, you know, on television. And so a lot of these shows that we were talking about that have kind of premiered in the last 5 years have showed up on the streaming networks, you know. And you have a show like Transparent by Jill Soloway that, you know, really kind of made Amazon's a reputation. You have Orange is the New Black, which helped put Netflix on the map as a kind of place to binge. An awful lot of these shows, I think, have benefited from, you know, the kind of chaos of so many networks competing for attention.
Yeah, absolutely. That's for sure. Now, what kind of ground is being made as far as pay? We just saw a story, I think it was earlier this week, on the show The Crown, which is a huge hit for, it's Netflix, right? Is that what it's on? The Crown?
Yeah.
Or is it Amazon Prime? One of the two. And that the Queen is not making as much money as she should. The male is it the King? I guess is making more. But the show's kind of about her, and here she is making less, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. You wrote in the book, I think, I want to say that I saw a statistic that when a female is running a show, there's 25% more, or 25% of the staff will be made up of females, whereas if they're men running the show, it's just much a smaller amount. How is the pay gap working out when women are running the show? Do we know, are the women that are running the shows able to dictate those decisions as well, or are those so higher up that the equality gap as far as pay is still a mess?
Yeah, I don't know that women. I don't have the statistics on that, and it's a lot harder to come by the statistics on money. But I don't know that women are able to. They're certainly, when women are in charge, they're definitely hiring a much higher proportion of women. I mean, it's a much more even playing field. But I think anecdotally, women are still being paid less. And, you know, I think that, yes, when they are in charge, they're going to even the playing field for money, too. But, you know, they themselves tend to pull in less money than the male creators. And you know, I think Hollywood is has all kinds of strange systems. So the Crown, I think the explanation, you know, was that the male actor had a higher quote. You know, I mean, he had a higher, you know, salary coming in because he had a more successful
right.
TV show. And so, you know, there are all of these rules in the industry and systems that kind of make it very hard for women to get a deal. And frankly, it make it hard just to get up on the ladder because, you know, a lot of it is done by word of mouth, by people you've already worked with. And so, you know, sometimes women have a hard time even just getting a foot in the door, let alone getting paid equally.
Yeah. It is tough, isn't it? Because there are things like that. Like if I was suddenly starring in a show with, I don't know, Cindy Crawford, and I was the star of the show and she's just the part-time person, they're going to pay her a ton more because they need Cindy Crawford to sell the show, right? It would be something like that. I imagine it doesn't work as often, nearly as often, in favor of women. But there is that at play there where your fame helps bring in some of it, the work you've done, what they think you're going to bring to the show. But then it's 2 and 3 years in when the people aren't getting paid the same amount that really drives you crazy. When Mark Wahlberg is getting paid $5 million for reshoots and Michelle Williams is getting nothing, basically, for a film. And different
right.
things like that are always stunning. Do you think that stems down to just sexism? Or is there also just, you know, it's amazing to me. The most amazing part of the Michelle Williams, Mark Wahlberg story was that they're both repped by the same agency.
And that's the thing. Yeah, that was really awful. That was a really awful story. And I think part of the conversation that we're having right now is these invisible rules and these invisible systems and negotiations that are happening. And, you know, if people were unconscious of them before, they're not unconscious anymore, right? So we're all sort of being forced to, like, see all of these invisible lines and say, well, wait, this really isn't fair. How, you know, how do we fix this? And so people are trying to figure out system, you know, like the inclusion writer that, you know, came up at the Oscars, trying to figure out, like, are there ways that the agencies can, you know, be more fair when they're negotiating their fees for their female stars as well as their male stars? Are there ways that we can make sure that, you know, people are being considered in, you know, for roles and being paid the same? So it's feels like a good thing that people inside the industry, but also outside the industry, are just like thinking about it for the first time.
We only have a minute left, but how do you feel the state of everything is now? Now that we've had all of these female-led shows, I would assume that everything doesn't happen at once, right? We have had all these female-led shows, which means that there should be more women gaining positions of power. There should be more young women coming up as writers. Do you feel that we're headed in a good place, or do you think there's sort of a false... like when President Obama got elected and we thought racism was over, did we get to a place here where we think, oh, see, we solved this. There's all these women everywhere. It's fine.
We didn't solve it, for sure. And you know, as we said before, like, you know, it tends to be like two steps forward and one step back. But, you know, the fact that there are so many talented, you know, women writing and directing and acting means that there is now this huge pool of talent, and there's all these cool shows. So I don't see it, you know, going back. And you know, hopefully we don't let it go back. I mean, I think we want to see, you know, a lot of kind of as many different kinds of stories as possible, and as many different sort of ways to be a woman on TV as possible. So I feel optimistic about it.
The book is called Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television. Joy Press is the author. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great night. Joy Press, Stealing the Show. You can visit her at joy-press.com. News is coming up next. If you've been thinking, I want to try out one of those MyPillows I've been hearing about.
Another chain grocery store, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, and I usually buy those on credit, too, at Walgreens and a Jewel and stuff like that, and I've never had a problem in the past. Mm. But I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they're like, this is, we're getting scammed or something like that.
Yeah, so that's where I had to use my PIN, outside of the normal place. You got to use it at the bank.
Correct. That's the only place I try to use it ever, if possible. Otherwise, avoid it at all costs. Mm-hmm. You don't want that getting out there.
Nope.
All right. So you've been reporting on on Andrew McCabe, former FBI deputy director. Mm-hmm. He was director for a short amount of time after Trump fired Jeff Sessions. But him and Trump...
After Comey.
I'm sorry. After Trump fired Comey.
Yeah.
Jeff Sessions fired McCabe.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty interesting story because... internally, so this looks bad on Sessions and Trump, like they're forcing this guy out, and one of the guys on Patty's show was saying it's petty 2 days before he retires, you fire him. Mm-hmm. And maybe that is petty, maybe it's not, I don't know. They did an internal investigation, there was an internal review by the Justice Department's Inspector General, and they recommended that he be fired.
Right.
So, how do we look
at that? But the investigation determined that he spoke to the press... Which, in his role at the time, that's what he does. That's amongst his many duties.
The report evidently says that McCabe authorized a discussion involving one of his top aides, the FBI's chief spokesman, and a Wall Street Journal reporter for a story published October 30th, 2016, that included details of McCabe pushing back on Obama appointees in the Justice Department to continue an FBI investigation into the Clinton Foundation. FBI officials are barred from disclosing information about ongoing criminal investigations. So that's what I'm reading.
Okay.
And that's why it was, you know, wrong. Now, maybe he could have gotten a slap on the wrist. Maybe he could have, who knows what.
Right.
The funny thing is, if he and Trump weren't already at odds, what he's being fired for, Trump would have loved, right? Because supposedly he was authorizing them to show that he's pushing back on Obama and that they want to do more investigating into Hillary Clinton. Things that Trump would love to hear, right?
Right.
But because they haven't gotten along, President Trump was apparently ecstatic as he tweeted earlier tonight, Andrew McCabe fired, all caps. A great day for the hardworking men and women of the FBI. A great day for democracy. Sanctimonious James Comey was his boss and made McCabe look like a choir boy. He knew all about the lies and corruption going on at the highest levels of the FBI. I don't know. Yeah. Now, Trump alleges that there were other things. So this lie is what got him fired, right? This investigation. Mm-hmm. But Trump has been all over him because McCabe's wife had run as a Democrat and received a lot of money from Terry McAuliffe, who's a big supporter of the Clintons. And he felt that that was, you know, bad news there. So we heard the name McCabe earlier this year because supposedly Trump asked him who he voted for. And I believe McCabe wouldn't answer it, right? I thought that's how that went.
I can't remember that incident.
So it's another fascinating weekend in the White House. As we didn't get a big dump on late Friday night of firings, but the rumors are that, I mean, the rumors are just about, it would be easier to say who's still going to be there, right?
I don't even know if you can say that.
Because the rumors at the end of the week were John Kelly's going to go, and who else is left? McMaster went, right? Or is McMaster the next one we think
McMaster
is about to go?
McMaster is the next one.
The one we think is about to go. Right. Supposedly they're giving him time to line up his next thing or whatever.
Well, that's nice of them.
But I also wonder if when all these reports came out that all these firings were coming, then Trump's like, well, no, now we're not doing it because I'm not going to make them all right. You know what I mean?
But they eventually happen. Everybody's been reporting on these firings for weeks.
They do seem to eventually happen. So what's your guess? I am just fascinated by Melania.
I feel for her. I really do.
You know, I think we were just talking with Joy Press about the TV show The Crown,
mm-hmm.
about the Queen. And I started thinking about the TV show that'll happen about this Trump White House someday. Maybe 10, 20, 30 years from now. Who knows?
Ooh.
But it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
And I also think, so Jess brought down the mail that we got this week for the show.
Anything for me?
I don't think so.
Darn.
Well, I could see. What did I get rid of? Hold on. There might be something here. There was a postcard, Roger, for the Lakeside Singers Spring Concert Series.
Ooh.
So little time, so much singing. So you maybe could attend that Friday, April 6th, 7:30 at the Music Institute of Chicago in Evanston, Nichols Concert Hall.
I would love to go
right
there, but
you.
I work on Friday.
Gonna have to work, yep. Yeah. So, all right, well then, there you go. But I did get a book in the mail.
Oh.
It is titled Lady in Red, An Intimate
Lady
Portrait
in
of
Red.
Nancy Reagan.
Oh.
Eh.
Really?
Well,
you
I
don't,
mean,
you're not.
I was never a huge Reagan fan, and Nancy Reagan seemed, speaking of sanctimony, seemed a little sanctimonious at the time to me. I don't know. She just seemed talk about a difference of 30 years, huh?
Yeah.
How prim and proper and everything.
Very prim.
Whether you liked Reagan's policies or not,
mm-hmm.
there seemed like a great love affair between those two. Do you remember that it was kind of scandalous that he was even divorced?
Oh, back when he did it.
That she was remarried. When he ran for president, wasn't he our first divorced president? I think he was. Pretty sure about that.
Right.
Here we go. Jeez. Roger, the librarian, will now look that up. But as he looks that up, my point is that it's such a different time.
Boy, you are. That's why you're sitting in that seat.
He was the first divorced president?
Yeah. America has had only one divorcee president, but two widower presidents moved on to second wives while in office. One president never got married at all. Ronald Reagan was the only president who ever divorced his wife.
Until now. And now we got a man who's on number three and reaching for the stars.
Wah, wah, wah.
Probably number four before he gets out of office.
Boy, you're really putting the cart before the horse.
Oh, Melania, come on. Melania, get the hell out of there. There's got to be enough. I mean, listen, I'll start the GoFundMe for Stormy. I'll start the GoFundMe for Melania if we need to.
And Barron.
Barron's going to be fine.
Mm.
Money-wise, he'll be fine.
He'll
be fine. But so besides my just not being that enthralled or excited about Nancy Reagan,
mm-hmm.
in this era that we're living in, this bombshell a moment era, To read about Nancy Reagan keeping the jelly beans full on the desk sounds, doesn't it, a little bit?
Well, I didn't know that was her job.
Well, I don't know either. I just remember that he always had the jelly beans.
Well,
on
yeah, but I don't know. It was her responsibility.
I know she loved him a lot, and she was very proper and all those good things, and he was scandal-free, at least when it came to Nancy and things like that. So that's all nice and all, but I just can't see reading a book about Nancy Reagan.
Well, okay, give it a shot. Who knows? You might
How
find
about
something.
You take this home and read it, and then you
I got a copy up here.
Do you really?
Well, somebody left a copy up here. I don't know if I should take it. It's just sitting on the file cabinet.
All right. Well, then
maybe. But you know how busy I am during the week, right? You do.
Okay. I think there's always time for reading, Roger.
But that's my problem. I don't have time for reading.
You make time for reading.
I'm busy with the grandkids 3 days a week. All right, that's
read
most of the day.
Read a little bit of that to the grandkids.
No, I'm not reading the
Kiddies
Lady in Red.
Around.
The
we're
history.
We're going to read a little bit about Nancy Reagan.
No, we're not going there. We just
we
did
go.
The Bremerton musicians.
Just
please
gonna open it up to a random page, and
any
we're going to read. Here we
any
go.
Any pictures on there?
My favorite story about Edie centered on when she and Dr. Davis, along with the extended Reagan family, were staying at Blair House in the days leading up to the 1981 inauguration. Legend has it that Edie was just pulling herself up out of the bathtub when a Secret Service agent mistakenly opened the door.
Oh, my God.
You can imagine that his life must have passed before his eyes as he saw his career aspirations come crashing down. The sprightly Mrs. Davis looked at him and said, "Well, young man, now you're going to have to marry me." It's a delight. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to do that because now I live in this era where somebody's fired, there's a scandal, Rush is taking over at every second of the day. The biggest scandal, sorry. I mean, I know he had his Iran-Contra, whatever, 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 but like the biggest memory is like of him saying, you know, doing the mic check saying, "We start the bombing in 5 minutes."
Yeah. That was a knee slapper.
312-981-7200. The calls are pouring in. Gene in Hoffman Estates, you're on the phone this morning. Hey, Gene, how are you?
Hi. Oh, I'm fine. I tell you, I always think about the double standards that we don't even think about, but we live by. Back to Nancy Reagan for a moment. How often do you ever hear that she was pregnant when they were married? She was already expecting.
Oh. I didn't know that.
Some historical thing brought that up not too long ago, and I remember hearing it about 15 years ago and could scarcely believe it. And, of course, you can put Roger on to double-checking that out, but I am very sure of it.
That's interesting. Gene, let me ask you, Jane Wyman, I believe, was the previous wife, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I think that's right.
Were they divorced already when he met Nancy?
I don't remember that.
Okay, that's fine.
I think they were probably making a movie together is how they met. But Roger, the historian, can figure that one out. But, you know, the minute...
I'm typing.
The minute that the Republican convention started, when McCain picked Palin as his vice president, and I can't think of her name, her daughter shows up pregnant and unmarried.
Oh, Sarah Palin's daughter.
Yeah, all I could think of is, what if that was Barack and Michelle's unmarried daughter?
Yeah, that would have gone differently, that's for sure.
Would have gone bananas.
Well, we could look at so much stuff just from this first year and say, if this was Obama. I mean, think about it.
Right.
He wore a tan suit, and people freaked.
I know it. And Michelle showed those beautifully toned arms of hers.
That was controversial, sure.
Well, you know what the latest thing is?
Can you even imagine? And, you know, all of the stuff that we kept hearing all these years about family values and morality and all of that from the GOP, and it went out the door.
You know what, Gene? I've been thinking a lot about that this week with the whole Stormy Daniels thing, and this. Now it's just going to end up being acknowledged that, yes, he did do this, and they paid it off, and whatever, he'll spin it however he wants. And then you look at the whole evangelical and the Christian vote and everybody who who will still support him for whatever reason. And I really feel that it all comes down to one issue for the hard evangelical and the hard Christian. It's abortion. And they will, and I believe that they would say, and I don't want to put words in people's mouths, but I believe they would say, whatever his flaws are, he is our best chance of ending abortion. And we will go with whoever gives us that opportunity.
Right,
and a
right.
Democrat will not give us that opportunity. So we don't care what he does. As long as he's nominating to the Supreme Court, he's going to be there as far as they're concerned.
And no one's going to get their vote. Isn't it interesting that one of their tenets is less government? They want government out of their business, but they do want government in the bedroom.
Well, yeah.
You know, I swear to God, it just, and they don't want it, as my youngest son says, who gets absolutely crazy on this topic, he says, yep, love the fetus, hate the child. They don't want to support the illegitimate children or any children on, you know, the ADC. That's just not their deal. They're very not caring about children who are brought into this world who simply cannot be cared for well enough by the person who brought the child in.
Well, I'm going to say this, Gene. I'm going to say that I don't want to put words in their mouths on or say that they're uncaring and they don't care anything about the child once it's born. I think they would say every child deserves a chance to be born, so I'll defend them a little on that. Then other things come into play, right? But I will say this, what drives me insane, because listen, abortion is an awful thing. Nobody's ever going to say it's a beautiful
thing. One would elect to have one if they could possibly avoid it.
I wouldn't think so either, right? But that's what drives me crazy is when we push anti-abortion, it seems in the same breath we're pushing against birth control, pushing against better education. We push this abstinence stuff, which just doesn't fly. I'm sorry. Give people their options so that if you want to get rid of abortion, help people quit getting pregnant. And it's not by saying, hey, just don't do that. It's not
right.
That doesn't work. Gene, thank you.
They want it all their way without any sane alternatives.
I hear you. Gene, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. You have a great morning. 312.
I've got an update.
981-7200. Yes.
From a Washington Post article in 2016, March of 2016. They got married, and she was already pregnant, and Patty Davis was born 7 months later.
Scandalous! Yep. At the time. Not anymore. Kathy from Kenosha, you hold on for just a second. It is 3:30 in the morning. We've got to get upstairs and check some headlines. Are you ready, Librarian Baddish?
I think so.
All right, there's Roger. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Kathy is on the line. Hey, Kathy, how are you this morning?
Hey, good. I just wanted to point out that Donald Trump Jr.'s wife filed for divorce today. Did you see that?
Vanessa filed for divorce, yes. Well, do you have a comment on that, or are you just giving me a headline?
Well, it's just, getting closer and closer to the president, let's just say, based on your comments about 20 minutes ago with Melania.
You think that slowly the children will divorce before it reaches the inner circle?
Yes. It's moving in closer and closer.
Well, that's very...
You gotta love it.
Well, right. Let's not love anybody's misery or sadness or divorce. Of course, that's terrible. And they have five kids, for goodness sakes. They have a big family.
Well, it's great for the late night comedians, let's just say that.
Well, they are not going to be out of work anytime soon, that's for sure.
Anytime soon. All right,
Kathy, have a great weekend. Thank you so much. I don't want to, let's not be like that. We're not going to do that. We're not going to revel in somebody else's sadness. It's terrible whenever a family goes through divorce. And while it may be hard for a lot of us to ever like Donald Trump Jr., it is what it is, right? So we had heard rumors that they were going to get a divorce. They might have been having a tough marriage for years. Let's face it, 50% of us end up divorced at some point. So let's not read too much into it. And Vanessa wasn't going through everything Melania has been going through, that's for sure. 608 writes, I love this show until Trump got elected. Now the only thing you guys ever do is talk about Trump and bash Trump. Well, that's not true. When we talk about Trump, we tend to bash Trump. But he has set himself up for that. it's hard to say all these positive things. You know, we'll see how the tariffs work out. He thinks he's had some success with that. And people would argue whether that's going to be good or not. We'll find out how those things are going to work out over the next couple of years. 312-981-7200 is the number. If I had to bet, though, I just can't imagine Melania sticking this out. She has seemed unhappy ever since, I mean, since Inauguration Day, right? We saw there was video on the Inauguration Day of President Trump turning around, saying something to her. She smiles and laughs, and then when he turns away, she gets this look on her face like she just ate a bad pickle and just, like, seems disgruntled. We've seen at least two different videos of her appearing to slap away his hand when he tries to hold her hand. There's got to be so much tension all the time. You hear all these stories about President Trump and how he is. I would have to assume when Barron is done with school, I would think him and Melania maybe would go back to New York for the summer. I guess I don't know what they'll do. But it's got to be tough. It's got to be tough to be Melania. It's got to be tough to be in the White House at all. And you know, I'm joking about the Nancy Reagan book. But can you imagine? I don't know who's going to be the next president. But whoever the next president is, assuming it's, say it's Mike Pence, or say it's, I don't even know who on the Democratic side would be, like, you know, boring. But we go back to a Mike Pence or somebody who just has, I mean, President Obama was boring comparatively, right? He never sent a nasty tweet to somebody. He never, like, did anything outrageously scandalous. It's going to be hard for the media and for all of us, I think, in some ways, to go back to a time where, you know, that's the president, they're doing what they do, and we don't pay that much attention to them. I mean, now it's like reality TV 24 hours a day, and the president feeds it with the tweets. He does. 312-981-7200 is the number if you wanted to jump in at all. Boy, United Airlines had a rough week. And I'll be very interested to see what comes out of that. I know our pet expert here, Steve Dale, was all over covering what was going on with United Airlines and the dog that died on the trip. But since then, they've lost two other dogs, sent them to the wrong place. Which I just...
I heard of one. I heard of one that went to Japan.
Right. And then there was another one at the same time that, so the one dog, let's see, Ergo the German Shepherd was supposed to land in Kansas City this week with the rest of his family. They're relocating from Oregon. Instead of going to Kansas City, however, United Airlines flew the dog to Japan.
That's
now Ergo will arrive in Wichita, Kansas around 8:30 tonight after a few delays. But I swear that there was a situation earlier this week that wasn't this, but it was two dogs that went to the wrong place.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't have that on this story, but they've had a rough week, to say the least.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how much more is going to come out about the story about the dog being put in the...
That is the most outrageous story I have heard, seriously. How do you... All right, so I worked for a company, public relations firm. Client was Nine Lives. Morris the cat was the spokes cat.
Right.
When the handler of Morris would fly, they always flew first class.
Well, that's
the handler had a chair, had a seat, and Morris had a seat in its cage. Now, my understanding is that if you want your pet to fly with you in the cabin, you must purchase a seat for that.
Mm-hmm.
Be in the... in the case, in the carry-on, and in the seat.
What if the carry-on fits under the seat? So I don't know what the rules are. I don't know that they have exact rules. And that's the problem. I was telling Steve Dale this week, he's got to form a commission or something to get with these airlines to get a standard set of here's what is allowed, here's what is not allowed, and here's how this works. Because it seems like we're always hearing a different story every week. So in this United Airlines flight, the person has a little dog in a little carrier, and they're told they have to put it in the overhead bin. I read that the flight attendant claimed she didn't know there was a dog.
Oh, how do you not?
Well, listen, Roger, think about it. You're a flight attendant. You got 150 people coming on a plane.
Right.
You're ushering them all in. There's way too much crap for the overhead bins. Somebody's got this on their lap.
There's a dog barking inside of that. You tell me that whole time that she's claiming the dog never barked?
No, she's claiming she didn't know when she told the person who put in the overhead bin that there was a dog in there. If the dog wasn't making noise at the time, I could see that.
Well,
that would be possible.
Why didn't the passenger tell her there's a pet in here?
This is my question, and I don't want to blame the owner because they lost their dog, and it's clearly, and United said, hey, this is our fault, we screwed up. They seem to take ownership of it. But at what point do you go, well, I'm not doing that. There's a dog in here. My dog is in here. I'm not putting him in the overhead bin.
Right.
And then we hear that the dog was barking and clearly in trouble during the flight.
Can hear it.
How do you not just step up and say, I'm getting this down? How does that...
Something's not right here.
And I know
there's,
we're all scared of...
There's a piece not in the puzzle.
That's what I wonder. Because yeah. I know we're all scared of being on airlines now, and we don't want to get dragged off like the screaming man, and we don't want to divert a flight because we did something. But do you think reason says, hey, this was a dog that you just let on the flight. I don't know that he's doing so well up in the storage bin. Can yeah. we bring him down? Because quite honestly, once the flight starts, you can bring down your luggage and set it on your lap.
Sure.
It doesn't all have to stay in the overhead bin.
Right.
They could have gotten it down. So I don't know what the whole story to that is, but it's frustrating to say the least.
Extremely. Yeah.
And sad. And I wouldn't fly with my dog. I wouldn't fly no. with Bailey unless I absolutely had to, unless I'm moving somewhere.
But
I'm
if
not taking
you're moving
my dog.
Somewhere,
I would never
moving,
put my dog in cargo.
No.
And that's how
never.
Most dogs fly.
I know. Never.
That seems like a bad idea.
And I've felt that way for several decades. I don't know why. It just, the thought of having a pet cage or a pet container being handled like luggage in these planes.
And traveling with the luggage
yeah.
in there where you know that.
It's not heated.
Oxygen and
yeah,
heat aren't regulated
right. no,
correctly.
No.
There's no
and
way they are.
I don't even care if they have a special section. You know, there is an airline. I can't remember which one it was. It was several years ago. I think several stories were done on it here at the station where that's all they do is they fly animals around. It's
right.
heated.
And
there's individual
didn't last very long, did it?
Oh, really?
Well,
I don't know.
Have you heard of them lately? I'm guessing that that's, you know, there's not enough money in that. That doesn't
probably,
take
yeah.
off. All right, Robert has a comment on this. Robert, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patty's Day to you, sir.
You know, I fly all over the world, okay? I have 2 million miles saved, and I've never known that there's no oxygen in the overbin compartments. And I've been flying since I actually have a pilot's license. I never knew that.
Well,
did you know that there was no oxygen in there?
I would have never thought about it, because why would I even think about it, right?
No, I understand it, but it just boggles the mind that, and again, nothing against the owner, because she had a child with her, blah, 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 but people supposedly heard a dog barking.
Yeah.
Well, why won't you stand up and open the damn compartment? You're real quick to take a picture of a Chinese guy getting dragged off the train, you know, dragged off the air. But why won't you just stand up and open it up and go, hey, there's a little dog in there.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know. We just don't know. That's a good question. Somebody texted.
But here's the good thing. Now we know that there's no oxygen up there. And if you're going to bring a little dog on the plane with you, like you said, either buy the dog a seat, because there's nothing. I've flown coach to China, and there's nothing that can fit underneath that seat.
Well, the interesting thing is they allowed the dog
let
on the
alone,
plane.
Let alone a human body sitting in coach. Have you ever flown 14 hours in coach?
No, I have not.
I don't recommend it.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. Thank you so much for the call, Robert. I really appreciate it. I would not want to do that. Texter from 312 says, I just flew United with my dog. The rules are they have to fit into a carrier and be able to fit under the seat in front of you. You pay $125 for the trip one way. Another texter says the family were not English speaking except for a 10 or 11 year old. Should she have defied the flight attendant? So there you can see a little bit of now we're seeing the complexities of this. They don't speak English. They're being told to do one thing.
Yeah.
They're probably nervous about flying because when you don't speak English, maybe you get pushed around a little bit, or maybe, you know, they're worried about getting, you know, whatever. You just want to make your flight and not have any problems. So
but if the dog now is making noise, if the dog is making noise now in the overhead bin during the flight,
yeah,
noisy in the cabin.
Yeah.
It is noisy with the air and everything.
But it sounds like people heard.
Yeah. So
you would think somebody else would have said, "Hey, that a dog up there?
Yeah.
That might not be good." That, and you would think the dog probably didn't sound good after a while. If the dog was dying,
yeah,
I would imagine they would have said, "That dog sounds like it's in distress."
Yeah.
So I imagine we'll hear more when a report comes out about what happened and what's going on. Yeah. But it's terribly sad. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN.
Hi everyone, Steve Bertrand here. Great news. My WGN October trip to England sold out so fast that we've added a second tour, this one leaving October 11th. Same great itinerary, same great price, and this one will be hosted by WGN's Brian Noonan. You'll enjoy tea on the Thames, see Bath, Stonehenge, Windsor Castle, and more. Take in Shakespeare at Stratford-upon-Avon and stroll through the Cotswolds. And my group and Brian's group will actually hang out for a couple of days at the same hotel in London. So I'll see you there. Check out the details at WGNradio.com or just give me a call, 847-6
Hi, I'm Mike Muller from Muller Honda in Highland Park. I could spend a lot of time telling you we're the biggest dealer, we have the best price, and we take care of you fabulously. But that's my opinion, so why not let someone else, not named Muller, tell you what they think?
I had a great experience at Muller Honda in Highland Park when purchasing my new Civic. The staff was knowledgeable, courteous, and very helpful, and willing to work with me and get a great deal. They were very responsive to my numerous emails and messages, and they also were great in walking me through all the features. They have an excellent service staff there.
I love your story because this is the way Muller does business, helping our customers and doing things the right way, especially now during the Honda Dream Garage Spring event. Visit Muller Honda in Highland Park or go online to muller-honda.com and you will not be disappointed.
Chicagoland homeowners call Cobblestone Development for their home improvement projects. Why? Because of Bill Conforti and the expert team at Cobblestone. Bill's 30-plus years of experience producing award-winning projects speaks for itself. Windows, siding, kitchens, baths. Call Bill Conforti at Cobblestone Development. Mention this commercial and Bill will take 20% off your entire home improvement project. Visit cobblestonedevelopment.com or call 773-661-0606.
The Midwestern University Multispecialty Clinic in Downers Grove offers a comprehensive, patient-centered healthcare experience at their dental institute, family medicine clinic, speech-language institute, physical therapy institute, and eye institute. At their clinics, you will receive exceptional care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Learn more at mwuclinics.com or call 630-743-4500. 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic, your family's home for healthcare.
Invest your tax refund in a kitchen renovation that will pay dividends for years to come. Hi, it's Tom Janke of The Edge Kitchen and Bath Showrooms with Lindsay of the Mr. Fix-It Show.
Tom, the kitchen is where people spend so much of their time.
I know, so make it incredible. Let our top designers show you our gorgeous kitchen cabinets, countertops, and flooring. We can meet any design need and budget.
And Tom, you have the best professional designers. They listen to your needs and bring your dream kitchen to life on a giant screen.
And it's all free of charge. Book a free consultation today.
Plus, you have hundreds of gorgeous granite and quartz countertops.
And we'll install them in 10 days or less with complete customer satisfaction.
The Edge Kitchen and Bath Showroom and Builder Supply Outlet on Cermak Road at 25th Avenue in Broadview. Or The Edge on 151st Street in Orland Park.
And online at edgekitchenandbath.com.
High-end look without the high-end price. The Edge Kitchen and Bath Showroom.
From Builder Supply Outlet.
Everyone can celebrate together with Sweet Alley's gluten-free baked goods. Sweet Alley's offers sweet, savory, and special occasion baked goods, including dairy-free and vegan. For Easter, enjoy their signature lamb cakes, specialty cupcakes and cookies, lemon bars, fresh fruit mini cheesecakes, challah, and decadent pies. Treat out-of-town guests to cinnamon buns and egg sandwiches for breakfast. Sweet Alley's bakeries are located in Hinsdale and Glenview. Pre-orders taken through March 28th. Enjoy a taste of the passion behind and the quality within. Go to sweetalleys.com. To learn more.
Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you for another hour or so on 720 WGN, at which point we'll be taken over by Max and Orion in the morning show. Speaking of airplanes and airlines, and by the way, Roger, I don't have enough time to get into it now, but people have texted the other story, a plane diverted because the dog was going on the wrong place. So they actually diverted a plane.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 630. It just happened yesterday, so three incidents this week. United Airlines diverts flight after dog loaded onto wrong plane.
Oh, it was on the wrong.
So it was headed to the wrong place. I don't know. Okay. They lose our baggage all the time. It's baggage.
I know. It's a miracle they don't lose us.
Well, if we checked ourselves in the baggage, it probably wouldn't work out so well.
Probably.
Well, and look at that. The woman who kept sneaking into O'Hare and sneaking on flights and like going to Paris. Place. How do people get away with that? That's amazing. To think about that, you'd be able to pull that off in this day and age. In this day
with
and age.
Everybody watching you.
Yes.
Amazing.
China will begin applying its so-called social credit system to flights and trains and stop people who have committed misdeeds from taking such transport for up to a year. Passengers waiting to board trains ahead of the Chinese Lunar New Year at Nanjing Railway Station, blah, 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 blah. It's about a picture. People who would be put on the restricted list include those found to have committed acts like spreading false information about terrorism and causing trouble on flights, as well as those who use expired tickets or smoked on trains. According to two statements issued on the National Development and Reform Commission's website on Friday, those found to have committed financial wrongdoing, such as employers who failed to pay social insurance or people who have failed to pay fines, would also face restrictions. The move is in line with President Xi Jinping's plan to construct a social credit system based on the principle of once untrustworthy, always restricted. Said one of the notices, which was signed by eight ministries, including the country's aviation regulator and the Supreme People's Court. China has flagged plans to roll out a system that will allow government bodies to share information on its citizens' trustworthiness and issue penalties based on so-called social credit score. So if you were found to have not paid a fine or spread false information, we're going to have a social credit score.
And you can't use public transportation.
Yeah. You won't be able to fly, and you won't be able to take trains.
Walk.
That, you know what, that, the, well,
it's going to, you might even get stopped if you try to leave your neighborhood.
It's going to lead to people committing more crimes.
So they can get on the no-fly list? What?
Once, so, say, I don't know what all is going to be on this list in China, but say you had an affair and you cheated on your wife, you ended up getting divorced.
Okay.
Now you cannot fly, you cannot take the train.
Right.
That's going to limit your work. Depending on your job.
Right.
And maybe that's going to ruin you financially. Then you're going to turn to a life of crime. There's going
to
be...
Wait, I don't see the connection there. Why would you turn to a life of crime?
Because...
So you get a job closer to your home. So you get, you ride a bicycle. So you get a ride from a friend who's straight, you know.
Do you really think done anything wrong? That once you're found to have committed some act, like failed to pay a fine, didn't pay social insurance, whatever that is, used an expired ticket, or you smoked on a train. You smoked on a train, Roger. Mm-hmm. You cannot fly or take trains anywhere anymore. You cannot use the bus. Oh. If your car breaks down, you're out of luck. We're national, so you're going to walk to WGN? No, you're not.
I'll leave early. I have to go put a newscast
together. Yes, you better. You have 2 minutes. I'm playing it quick now just to punish you. 312-981-7200. 847 checks in and says, read on Twitter that wealthy families often get a divorce in case one of them is criminally indicted. All the assets can be given to the other so they are not seized. Vanessa hired a criminal lawyer for her divorce, not a divorce lawyer. Didn't hear about that. I thought they were talking about China there for a second. All right. Quick break and then the news on 720 WGN. All right, that song was Mark, Roger, you upstairs.
Yes.
You know who that was?
I have no clue.
Can you play that again for a second?
I'm just getting funky with it.
This is an actor that you know very well.
An actor?
Before he was an actor. We don't have the whole. Does it go into the rap here? Or does it fade out, Chuck? Keep going with it.
One of the comedians?
Nope. Come on.
Swing. Oh, from one of the boy bands. No?
His brother was in a boy band. He wasn't. His brother's married to Jenny McCarthy.
I'm clueless.
Yeah, we don't have any of the rap here, do we? Here we go.
I'm totally clueless.
Mark Wahlberg.
Well, and that's what I was thinking.
It was Marky Mark. It was, yeah. Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch back in the day.
Okay, so he wasn't in the other boy. His brother,
no,
was in the
brother
other.
No, his brother was in, I don't know.
Not Backstreet Boys. New was Kids it Backstreet
the,
Boys?
New Kids on the Block.
New Kids.
Maybe.
Yeah. That's where I was thinking, but sure. I couldn't remember the name.
Donnie, I believe, was his brother. I believe. I could be wrong.
Donnie Wahlberg.
Wahlberg, yeah. Wahlbergers is their reality TV show, right?
And before Marky Mark bulked up and became a big action star.
He was bulked up back then. He was a Calvin Klein underwear model. And in this video, that was his one big hit, was Good Vibrations. He was ripped. I mean, really ripped back then.
I don't look at that stuff.
Back in the day.
I could care less.
It was a good song. It's a great song. That's on the radio, and I tell, because my kids have seen, it's funny, mm-hmm. I feel like every movie my kids have seen this year somehow has Mark Wahlberg in it. We saw, what's his movie with Will Ferrell called? Stepdads?
Oh, yeah. Stepdads 2.
Okay, we saw Stepdads 2. We'd seen Stepdads 1. They saw, what's the one where he's on the oil rig? Deepwater Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And then we rented A Perfect Storm.
Wow.
He's in all of them. They must think he's like the most prolific actor of
probably
the world right now.
I don't think so.
So good for you, Marky Mark.
Yeah. I'll tell you this about that song.
Yeah.
It had a good beat and you could dance to it. Thank you, American Bandstand.
Oh, God. So we were driving in the car and that song was on. And you like heard the whole rap that he does and the whole thing. I'm like, do you guys have any idea who that is? I had no clue. They died.
They didn't know. Really?
It was Mark Wahlberg.
Oh my gosh.
Couldn't believe it. All right. Jared Kushner.
Yes.
Who is President Trump's son-in-law, married to Ivanka. And he's been in charge of things such as restoring peace in the Middle East and others. He only had limited security clearance. And did it get stripped even further? Was that the John Kelly's
cleaning? Well, because he couldn't clear security.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get the full.
Most of the people in the White House are having trouble getting full clearance, it sounds like.
A lot of them.
So there's a story out this week about the debt that he and Ivanka have. They have to do these financial disclosure forms.
Well, anyone working in government has to do that.
Anyone does?
Yeah.
Everyone does?
I was a press aide.
Mm-hmm.
Working for, I had to, sure.
Okay.
Because you can't show any conflict of interest, no matter what your position is.
Recent revisions to the financial disclosure form filed by Kushner's wife, Ivanka Trump, bumped each of their debts. So they, in filings they had previously done, they had three lines of credit. Recent revisions to Ivanka's bumped each of those debts to a range of $5 million to $25 million. Versions of the couple's disclosures made public in July valued their debts at $1 million to $5 million apiece. Loans have been extended by three banks, Bank of America, New York Community Bank, and Signature Bank. Taken together, the sequence of filings indicates that the increase in the amounts outstanding under the lines of credit took place between last March, when Kushner's form was first submitted, and June, when Ivanka Trump's was first filed. The forms report the value of assets and debts in broad ranges. It's possible that the amounts outstanding have changed categories since last June. The changes take Kushner and Trump's reported debts to a range of approximately $31 million to $155 million.
Wow!
From the previously reported range of between $19 million and $98 million. When Ivanka Trump first filed her disclosure form in July, she reported the debts at the same level her husband originally did. However, in revisions to the form before it was formally certified by the Office of Government Ethics on December 26th, the outstanding debt for the three credit lines was raised to the higher level. One debt did drop in value as Ivanka Trump's form was revised. The amount owed on a Visa account went down to a range of $50,000 to $100,000 from the previously reported $100,000 to
$250,000. Holy smokes.
Now, Colleen and I owe a crap load on our Visa card, but we don't owe $50,000 to $100,000. I'll say that.
I haven't even seen $50,000 in my life.
So I read another article on this week that was saying, here's why this is a problem. And, you know, that's the whole concern, right, is people. So President Trump's body man, it was last week, I think, got fired abruptly. They said didn't even get to pick up his jacket.
Oh, that's
right. Escorted out of the building.
Yeah.
And people were wondering, like, what was that about? Mm-hmm. And it comes out this week that he was a heavy gambler. Mm-hmm. Not that he owed millions of dollars, but he was betting sometimes, I think I read, up to $10,000 at a time on events.
Mm-hmm.
And that constituted an issue where, what if he goes into major debt? Then he's exposed. He's maybe weak, and mm-hmm. you know, could fall prey to be a victim of something if he's that desperate, right?
Right.
Maybe he sells some secrets or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that gets him taken out on a rail. I mean, don't even get your jacket. Here we go. You're out the door, right?
Right.
But here's Jared and Ivanka owing mm-hmm. a lot of money, possibly up to $150 million. Now, people might say, listen, they're working for free, which President Trump has made a deal out of, saying, hey, they're working for free. They're doing this for their country, and they've got empires, so maybe they just take this credit now, and then when they get back in the world, they'll be able to repay it all back. Maybe they don't have any stress about this at all. But you could see where, when you're filing these reports and you're saying, well, our debt could be anywhere between God, what did I just say? It went up to
100,000, 150,000.
No, that was her credit card. Credit card.
What was the overall debt?
Their debt overall million? Is now valued in a reported range of between $31 million and $155 million.
Yeah.
Anywhere within there. That's a lot of money to owe.
Yep.
And you know, we've heard a lot of stories about Jared Kushner's family firm running into some trouble with the 666 building in New York. That's what you get for buying a building that's 666, mm-hmm. that's for sure. So there's concern.
And who's financing all this stuff? That's the concern.
Well, I don't understand how they don't have money, because Ivanka has been a vice president or whatever in the Trump organization forever. And she also
has her own clothing line and stuff.
That must, I think we all think, oh, they've got clothing, they got perfume, they must be loaded. Maybe that's not the money maker that we think it is. Maybe that doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're rolling in cash, or maybe that their cash isn't easy to access. You know,
could
it's in
be,
a
could
company,
all be tied
it's
up.
In holdings, sure. It's whatever. So we borrow and we pay back. The one story I was reading this week was making a big deal out of the fact that they owe so much on credit cards, and how odd that is for a considered really wealthy person to be throwing away all that money. Think about the interest charge each month on $100,000 on a credit card. It's got to be an insane.
40%?
Yeah. I mean, you could be paying $40,000. That's craziness.
Something's not right there.
So they're saying that in those circles, in those ultra-rich circles, people generally don't charge anything. They don't use credit for anything. They use charge cards, like an American Express or a Visa Black Card or whatever, that you have to pay off at the end of every month. And because they're wealthy, they can. Why would they, if they have the money, allow Visa to make insane amounts of money off of them?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a financial wizard. Trust me.
You and I together, my friend.
Yeah. Still, it doesn't feel right. Really doesn't.
It's weird.
I'm more concerned. I've seen reports over the last couple of months of concerns that that's probably why Kushner didn't get the clearance. Is that?
Oh, I think that because they say that is why. I think that's why.
Well, because they owed so much money, there was concern by the government, the investigative agencies, that they could be beholding to foreign interests.
Yeah,
and that they could be held to do things that they probably would not normally do, and so that would be against the government or whatever. So. That's why it got pulled. I don't know why it took so long, though. It was over a year.
Well, I think because Jack Kelly decided just to pull. They've had interim clearance.
Right. And so he was in top-level secret meetings for a long time. He had access to stuff that foreign entities would love to know about.
It's going to be a fascinating book when it's all over.
God, it's going to be more than one book. It'll be an encyclopedia.
Oh, I mean, that Fire and Fury book already is so old and outdated.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating to read. I mean, think about it. When's the last time you heard the name Steve Bannon?
About 2 weeks ago when he went overseas to give a speech.
I didn't hear that. Who did he go give a speech to?
You didn't?
I don't remember. Maybe that's when I was gone for that weekend.
All right.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago I was gone, right?
All right, Steve.
He go to India or something, or what did he do?
Bannon's speech. Did I spell that right? I don't think so. Hold on a second here. Da-da, California? Nope. Nope. France, March 10th, 2018. He spoke to a... Oh, okay, sure, that's a YouTube. I don't want that. Here we go. No, that's 2014.
Okay, in the all meantime, right, we'll
me
get back
break.
To Roger.
Oh, here. It's where he gives a fighting speech. He says, this is 7 days ago. Let them call you racists. Steve Bannon delivers fighting speech to France's National Front. You didn't hear about this?
No.
He had a surprise. This is from Washington Post. Former White House senior staffer Stephen Bannon addressed France's far-right National Front on Saturday, heralding the global populist tide and attacking the opposition party media. Bannon's surprise visit to the party's conference in Lille, announced via Twitter late Friday, was his most recent stop on a European tour. It's included Switzerland along with Italy, where last week voters abandoned establishment parties, opted for a hung parliament dominated by right-wing anti-immigrant populists. I came to Europe as an observer and to learn, Bannon said. What I've learned is that you're part of a worldwide movement that is bigger than France, bigger than Italy, bigger than Hungary, bigger than all of it. And history is on our side. The tide of history is with us, and it will compel us to victory after victory after victory. He also encouraged the party to stick to its nationalist roots. Let them call you racists. Let them call you xenophobes. Let them call you nativists, he said. And on and on. You didn't know about that?
No, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah.
I think that's when I was traveling, though.
Oh, okay.
I missed some things. But Steve Bannon, I mean, so you heard about that, but overall, that seems like a long time ago when he was part of the White House, doesn't it? It wasn't that long ago.
No, it wasn't. Only a couple months. 3 months, maybe.
Seems like longer.
Yeah.
So a law firm representing U.S. President Donald Trump and the corporation that paid porn actress Stormy Daniels $130,000 in what she called hush money over an alleged affair with Trump. Oh, by the way, somebody texted me, like, wait a minute, what's the big deal about this? I just heard this happened decades ago. Was he even with Melania then? So, yes, it did. It was. It started right after she had Barron. That's kind of where it's really seedy and where it gets more icky. And the reason it's news now, well, because she's talking about it, but... The hush money was paid during the election, just a few weeks
before. And it came from the Trump Organization, apparently, the check.
Sort of.
It came through
Cohen,
the lawyer.
He formed his own little LLC to pay it, so it didn't come from the Trump Organization.
Well,
and he says he used home equity loan to pay it, which could be true or could be how they're covering up that the campaign paid for it, which would be illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't let that out, if that's what happened. Maybe he's just the best friend in the world.
He's a good buddy.
That is the guy you call when you do wrong.
Mm-hmm. I got a flat tire. Can you come help me?
But here's the... Can you imagine calling your friend in the middle of the night? Listen, here's the thing. I don't know who else to call. I'm running for president. And the thing is, I had an affair with a porn actress like a decade ago.
And in the background... No, he calls at that time.
No.
And in the background, you hear,
why would he call him a decade ago?
Because he's known him for a long time. He wanted
he didn't
to take
know
care
he's
of him
run
back
for
then.
The president. No. No, he just thought of, by the way, I just thought of something. Like a decade ago, I was having an affair. It was right after Melania had Barron.
Who's on the phone, Donald?
Dude, could you, take out a home equity loan for, 130 grand and pay her off for me? I swear I'll cover it. I'll get you back. Donald does not have the best reputation with that. He is not a Lannister by any means. And what a good friend who no matter what would say, yeah. Because I don't know if Cohen is married, but could you imagine going to your wife and going, honey, I got a buddy that needs a favor. I'm gonna borrow a little bit from our home equity line. Oh, is he okay? Yeah, it's fine. I just got to help him out. He's in a tough jam. How much do you need? $130,000. You're what?
Wait, I'm sorry. You didn't give enough pause. You didn't give enough pause on the phone. 130,000. Two, three, go.
I'm sorry. You're what?
Sorry.
Oh, no, you're not. Oh, over my dead body. We're not going to do that. What friend is this? Who? Oh, Donald, you're not giving him $130,000. I know what kind of trouble you get. I remember when you went out that weekend with him, you came back reeking. Women. Booze. I mean, that's talk about doing somebody a solid.
Yeah.
If Cohen ever gets in trouble of any sort and somebody's going to prosecute him, Trump better pardon him in like a heartbeat. And he could just hold the press and they'll be like, President Trump, this man is very guilty of all these crimes. And he would just come to the podium and go, here's what happened. He paid $130,000 out of his own pocket when I needed it. He is pardoned. I don't care if he murdered somebody. He's pardoned. He's fine. I mean, who could blame President Trump? No matter what he does, he has to pardon him.
Well, and he's already made those plans. Remember, within months of taking the presidency, he started
asking questions about pardons and when can I use it and how can I use it. And he pardoned Joe Arpaio right away.
Yep.
Right? Took care of that, so we got that.
Oh wow! Look at, so I'm reading a story about Cohn and the money and the lawsuit and everything. Cohn, who is Trump's attorney, referred all questions to his attorney in the matter.
There have been stories about the legal fees of everybody working in the White House. And how crazy it is, like Hope Hicks and all these people that are getting called by Mueller, they need to get attorneys. Just and that's amazing. Coming out of their own pocket. And I think a lot of the people that aren't getting fired but are just leaving, it might be because I can't afford to work here. I got to go make some real money now because I'm tangled up in all this stuff. 312-981-7200. Let's catch up on a break and get back to it on 720 WGN. You're not going to believe what's going to be available at your Sonic Drive-In this summer. We will tell you after the news. Don't want to grow up? Chicago's Best has all those delicious meals that make you feel like a kid. It's an all-new Chicago's Best Kid at Heart Sunday night at 10 on WGN TV. You know, Roger, when I see this copy, it says don't want to grow up,
and
you know what I think of right away?
No,
I don't want to grow up, because baby, if I did, I couldn't be a Toys R Us kid. More games, more toys, oh boy, I want to be a Toys R Us kid.
Yep. And you know, I went out Wednesday for lunch with a friend, and I had to go out to Woodfield. I haven't been out there in a long time.
On my stomping grounds now.
Yeah. And I went down Golf Road, and Golf at Milwaukee was the Toys R Us store that Bridget and I would always go to to buy stuff for the kids when they were growing up, or now 40 and almost 40 and almost 30-year-old. And this was like the day before the official announcement. Because you knew it was happening anyway. Yeah, you'd been hearing stories anyway. And there were people in the lot, and there were cars in the lot. And I was thinking, oh, man, maybe I should go in there and get, like, a ton of stuff for, like, nothing. But apparently, I'm seeing some stories where there are not sales.
Well, I thought that's what Patty was saying earlier tonight, that she was just in there. And they're not liquidating as of yet. I think that, you know, once they get down to we're closing down, then... The price dropping.
They'll probably wait as long as they can to sell everything at cost.
Well, they should, because right now they can ride the wave of nostalgia for a couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And people are like, oh, man, Toys R Us is going away. Let's go to Toys R Us. And then you jack up the prices, get whatever you can. And it's not until, you know, we're 10 days away and we just want this crap off the shelves that things will start getting marked down.
Yeah. Well, and again, something from our childhood. It's taken away, and we start lamenting, and start asking as many people who say that, well, when was the last time you were there?
Yeah. Well, no, I can get it on Amazon.
Yeah. Boom.
There you go. All right, 4:32. Let's get the headlines. Roger Badish. Matt Bubala with you. 720 WGN. Roger 630 says I-55 is not close. I just drove through it down to one lane.
55 which way?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going with the report that we have. Thank you. I appreciate it. And that is a fluid situation down there. I'm still showing that it is closed between Lamont and Joliet Road, but down to one lane at Joliet Road. We will keep our eyes on it for you. But thank you.
Let's do that.
Thank you. Thank you.
312-981-7200 is our number. Sonic Drive-Ins, adding a interesting drink this summer.
Okay. I've never been to a Sonic.
I have. They have good ice cream. They have good burgers.
All right.
Fast food restaurant plans to roll out pickle juice slushies to locations nationwide in June.
Sorry.
Food and Wine's Maria Yagoda got a chance to taste the bright green beverage during a recent trip to Sonic's headquarters in Oklahoma City. She was shockingly pleased with the product. She said, quote, "It's surprisingly delicious. Sweet and tangy, the bright brine compensates for the oversavoriness you might have been worried about." Yagoda also added that the pickle syrup that is used to make the slushies can be added to any of the other menu items like burgers or shakes. So let your creativity run wild while you wait for the new edition to launch.
I don't think so. Well, I know this is going to sound sacrilegious, but I don't like pickles.
I like pickles. I don't like, I wouldn't drink pickled juice. I wouldn't put it in a slushie.
Yeah.
That seems odd. You got to really love your pickle juice for that one. All right. One more interesting story related to President Trump and Russia. And this is one, this is the first I've ever heard of any of this. Have you heard of Felix Sater?
Doesn't jump right out at me, no.
Felix Sater is a Soviet-born American businessman who says he was, quote, a senior advisor to Donald Trump. I'll read you from a Good Morning America story here.
Okay.
Has become known for his supporting role in the unfolding drama that is special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation of Russia, blah, blah, blah. He's often referred to as the convicted felon and one-time stock scammer who promised to, quote, get all of Putin's team to buy in on a proposed plan to build Trump Tower Moscow in the heat of the presidential campaign.
I did read this the other day. I didn't pay attention to the name.
I know how to play it, and we will get this done, Sater wrote to Trump attorney and confidant Michael Cohen.
Yeah.
His childhood friend, in emails published by the Washington Post and New York Times. Buddy, our boy can become president of the USA and we can engineer it. The project was abandoned, but as federal investigators launched a wide-ranging probe of alleged Russian interference in the 2016 election, including possible connections to Trump's campaign and personal businesses, Sater quickly found himself caught in the dragnet. Now they had an exclusive interview on Good Morning America. He said, I don't think if a screenwriter was trying to write this movie that they could make this up. Sater, 52, says that for the past two decades, he has served as a high-level intelligence asset for the DIA, CIA, and the FBI. As first reported this week by BuzzFeed News, Sater has helped bust mafia families, capture cyber criminals, and pursue top terrorists, including Osama bin Laden, earning praise from some of the country's top law enforcement officials. He won't say whether or not he's been interviewed by the special counsel, but it's almost certain that Mueller knows his body of work well. Mueller served as FBI director for much of Sater's clandestine career. As questions have swirled about his supposed loyalty to Russia, Sater is speaking out, recasting himself as an unheralded protector of the U.S. I am a patriot, Sater said. Having the opportunity to serve my country and do anything in its defense was a no-brainer. It was, where do I sign up? Sater says he was recruited as an intelligence asset in perhaps the unlikeliest of places, the bathroom. He was a young man living in Russia, where he was born, trying to rebuild a business career derailed by what he calls a, quote, bad, stupid, drunken night in a bar. He had been convicted of felony assault charges and spent a year in prison following a bloody bar fight in which he stabbed a man in the face with a margarita glass.
Ouch.
He needed money so desperately upon his release, he says, that he started working on what he calls the dark side of Wall Street, a reference to a so-called pump-and-dump stock scheme that reportedly defrauded investors of nearly $40 million. He was at a dinner party in Moscow when he says one of the guests followed him into the bathroom and identified himself as an agent of the U.S. government. He told Sater that he had unwittingly gained access to a group of high-level Russian intelligence operatives who had valuable information about Russian defense technology. They seem to like you, Sater recalls being told. You speak Russian, you blend in there, and your country needs you. Hold on here. It just went away. I hate when the computer does that. So So began, Sater says, his career in espionage. He says, now listen to this. This sounds like, remember when Chuck Barris, who was the host of The Gong Show, came out and said he was CIA guy all his life or whatever, and we were sort of like, whatever. Mm-hmm. Listen to this guy tell the story. He says he developed assets in several different countries by cultivating cover as a corrupt businessman, offering access to illicit schemes, and passed information to U.S. agents tasked with handling a variety of threats to national security. He says, they used to come to me with cases that had nothing to do with me and ask for my assistance, in which I would enthusiastically and wholeheartedly dive in and try to help. He says he tipped off law enforcement to potential assassination attempts on Secretary of State Colin Powell and President George W. Bush, obtained information and photographs about North Korea's burgeoning nuclear program, lured Russian cyber criminals hacking the U.S. financial system out of hiding so that they could be unmasked and captured, and he was even tasked with hunting for Osama bin Laden and managed to turn Mullah Omar's personal secretary into a key source that provided intelligence about al-Qaeda hideouts. The information he had obtained was so valuable that when his past caught up with him and he finally faced sentencing in connection with that multi-million-dollar fraud, the judge let him off with a mere $25,000 fine. Now, I think all this, like, whatever. This dude's so lying. This is so BS.
Right.
But then I read this. Former U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch told the Senate during her confirmation hearing that Sater, quote, provided valuable and sensitive information to the government, and that information was, quote, crucial to national security. So somebody backs him up.
Wow.
That work, he says, continues in some unspecified capacity to this day. He said as recently as last year, he was asked for assistance in making evaluations of various foreign governments and foreign individuals. He reportedly told the story under oath when he testified recently before the House Intelligence Committee, at which point he said even, quote, the Democratic aides who were there to question me regarding the Russia-Trump investigation stopped, paused, and thanked me for my service to my country. One of the few times in my life I almost cried. Sater says he made himself valuable to the U.S. government by knowing everything. When it comes to Trump, however, he says he knows next to nothing. His company, Bayrock Group, which began renting office space in Trump Tower, Sater says he introduced himself to Trump in 2000 and began funneling development proposals to Trump's desk shortly thereafter. I would bring him deals, Sater said. Sater claims he has helped the Trump organization secure financing on several major projects, but none has garnered more scrutiny than a failed proposal to build Trump Tower Moscow amid the launch of Trump's controversial campaign for the presidency. In 2015, Trump signed a non-binding letter of intent, which promised a $4 million initial payment to the Trump Organization to build the tallest building in the world in Moscow. In an email sent to Cohen published by The Post and The Times, Sater appears to celebrate an apparent merger of Trump's business and political fortunes. Faced with questions about his boast that he and Cohen would, quote, engineer a Trump presidency, using the deal to court Russian President Vladimir Putin's support, Sater pleaded ignorance. I am not a political person, Sater said. I don't understand the implications of the politics or the various strings that get attached to it and how good or bad it may look. Any perceived alignment of Trump's business and political interests, he said, was purely coincidental. I was trying to do a real estate transaction, he told ABC News. I clearly was not involved in the campaign, nor was I involved in any of the political end. And the hope that a large transaction like that would be built, if that was helpful to his run, that would be great. Asked if he knew certain key members of the Trump campaign, he claimed to have had zero contact with many of the Trump allies who have fallen under the spotlight. He denied knowing Michael Flynn, Paul Manafort, Rick Gates, George Papadopoulos, and Carter Page. Asked if then-candidate Trump could have softened his stance on Russia because he was simultaneously pursuing a business deal there, Sater demurred. I can't speak for the president, he said. And asked if, given his extensive sources in both the Russian foreign intelligence services and in the Russian criminal underworld, he knew of the effort underway to influence U.S. election, he issued a forceful denial. I was not aware of what they were doing, Sater said. I read about it just like everyone else in the newspapers. Sater called Trump's claim that he couldn't pick him out of a lineup disappointing, but says Trump has nothing to fear from his testimony to investigators. He is unaware, he said, of any Russian money in any of the Trump projects he's worked on and unaware of anyone in Trump's orbit who may have colluded with foreign powers during the campaign.
This guy's a character.
Yeah. But here's what I don't believe. So I got photos of North Korea's nuclear program. I found out about assassination attempts. I did all of these things. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about politics. I wasn't involved in that. Mm-hmm. That wasn't my area.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can, you know, oh, that was just real estate.
If you believe that, I have some special land in Florida for development. Waterfront property.
That would be warmer. 312-981-7200. We got Orion coming up with the morning show in 10 minutes on 720 WGN. Morning on 720 WGN. We've got Orion coming up from WGN Radio West in just a couple of minutes to check in with the morning show. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Roger, are you going to be, God, you know, some years we get just the greatest weather, and this is going to be a rough one for the parade, isn't it?
No, I've been in rougher. I've been in colder. I've got a picture of me when back in 79, 80, I think, wrapped up in a coat about as thick as the current parka I have now, with big fat ski gloves on, holding my recording equipment when I worked for Q101 as a reporter, covering a St. Patrick's Day parade when it was down State Street.
It just sounds awful.
And yeah, it was so cold that the battery in my two-way radio, the power got sapped out from the cold. I couldn't use it. So I don't think it's going to be that cold today.
Nope, but it's not going to be nice. So,
well, this afternoon, but the parade's this morning.
Yeah, that's the problem. They're dying the river usually around 9, right?
Yeah, about an hour or so before the parade.
So, you know, it's nice to be along the river and watch that happen, but not if you can't feel your fingers. That makes it less enjoyable, in my estimation. But to everybody that's venturing downtown today, good luck, be safe. You know, we got a St. Patrick's Day on a Saturday. You know, where I live out in Dundee, they do a big St. Patrick's Day parade every year. They did it last Saturday. On the
a week
10th.
Ahead?
Yeah. Mm. And I was surprised. And we were like, why are they doing that? But then I was thinking, well, because the bards are like, hey, how about we have 2 weeks of this instead of just one?
Jeez.
And insanity ensues. All right. Let's say hi to Orion next on 720 WGN. Thanks for hanging out with us this morning, everybody. We'll be back next week at 2 a.m. You can follow us on Facebook at The Matt Bubala Show, like me on Twitter at Matt Bubala. Right now, let's say good morning to WGN Radio West and our very own Orion Samuelson. Hey, Big O, how are you, sir?
Doing just fine, thank you. Enjoying the baseball fans who are here in Arizona for spring training season. And so far, we've had pretty good weather. It's been a little cooler, I think, than the Midwest tourists were hoping for. But cool here in the desert is about 65 degrees or
that's
so.
That's still a lot better than being at home right now. We're going to have a rough St. Patrick's Day.
I know. That forecast doesn't sound like the best parade weather, certainly. And I haven't heard of the doing a parade in Boston today after the snow's out there.
Well, that's a good question. I have no idea. Librarian Roger Banish will look that up right now.
Yeah, because they were talking about it this week that maybe it was so bad with the snow cover that they would not be able to get the parade route cleared in time so they could have an Irish parade in Boston.
That's interesting. That's amazing.
Well, I'm looking right now. It's 15 hours ago at Boston.com. It says how to watch the 2018 St. Patrick's Day parade in Boston. And marks the 117th year.
Yeah.
1 o'clock this afternoon. So maybe.
I can't make it. I won't be there.
Darn. Air Orion won't make it there in time?
Won't make it there in time. No, it would be way too long.
Okay.